Today, are the new leaders of Israel and Iran heading towards conflict? In the last week of July, a huge oil tanker managed by an Israeli company was making a routine journey.
It was on its way from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania to Fujairah in the United Arab Emirates. It was hit by an explosive which struck just beneath its bridge, about 85 kilometers north of the coast of Oman in the Arabian Sea.
Israel has been joined by its key allies in blaming Iran for a deadly tanker attack off Oman.
The facts have been pieced together in the days since, and it does appear that at least two drones, we call them kamikaze drones, they were not designed to return to from where they launched, hit the vessel just below its bridge in a living quarters. We are told that it hit a window and it caused an explosive that killed two seamen, one Romanian and one British national.
The Guardian's Middle East correspondent Martin Chulov watched as the blame game began.
There's been widespread condemnation and unusual pointed condemnation about Iran having been involved. That's come obviously from Israel, who has been very emphatic that an Iranian drone struck the vessel.
שמעתי עכשיו שאיראן באופן פחדני מנסה להתחמק מאחריותה לאירוע.
And Israel was joined in condemnation by the EU, the US and the UK.
I think that Iran should face up to the consequences of what they've done.
Iran denies any involvement in the attack. But it's just the latest of around 20 civilian ships being attacked by mines, drones and commandos while navigating one of the world's busiest shipping channels. And in recent days, Iran's ally Hezbollah has launched rockets into Israel from Lebanon, while Israel's new defense minister has threatened military action against Tehran. From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, the escalating shadow war between Israel and Iran. Martin, before we talk about this attack and the wider shadow war, let's start with where it's happening. Can you give me a sense of how important these waters are?
The waterways just to the north of the UAE, the Strait of Hormuz, are some of the most strategic waterways in the world. Upwards of 18 to 20% of the world's oil traffic travels through that relatively narrow 30-mile strait every day.
The Strait of Hormuz, which is perhaps one of the most volatile transit routes in the world. Now, this is where around 14 oil tankers carrying crude oil pass through every single day. The value of that crude is around $1.3 billion.
The navigation, were it not for the political risk or the threat of attack, is relatively straightforward. But because it is a bottleneck, it has become a focal point for states that are looking to disrupt shipping, whether that be the Iranians, as has been alleged, or other states in the region. That is one of the areas where, if you were looking to cause a problem, that you would concentrate your energies in doing so.
And this isn't the first time an attack has taken place there. Can you tell me a bit more about what's been happening in these seas over the last few years?
Well, it's an escalation in the sense that two people were killed and they were both foreign nationals, and that has drawn a lot of attention from Europe. But in addition to this attack, there have been many dozens of attacks, whether it be in the Arabian Sea, the Indian Ocean, down towards Yemen, up towards the Red Sea, or even in the eastern Mediterranean Sea.
Okay, some breaking news out of Iran now. Three ships are on fire at their southern Bushehr port.
In the last 18 months, the estimates are in the high dozens at the very least, and most of these attacks go unreported.
An Iranian cargo vessel stationed in the Red Sea came under attack off the coast of Djibouti.
They are part of a shadow war which is being fought between Iran and Israel on the waters of the region.
So as you've said, a lot of these attacks aren't being widely reported. But can you tell us a bit more about the most dramatic incidents at sea?
Syrian firefighters have put out a fire on an oil tanker after a suspected drone attack.
Well, several months ago, there was an Iranian tanker. We believe that this tanker was carrying oil to the Syrian regime. about 6 miles off the Syrian coast, a drone fired a rocket through that ship's bridge, and it did kill 3 people.
But Iranian state media said it was one of 3 Iranian vessels that arrived in Syria.
We've seen mines being used on Iranian ships in the Red Sea. We've seen the mysterious sinking of one of the largest ships in the Iranian Navy 3.5 months ago in the Arabian Gulf.
Iran's biggest Navy warship sank on Wednesday. The country's highest tonnage Navy vessel, known as the Karg, caught fire in the Gulf of Oman near the port of Jask.
There have been many mines placed on Israeli ships or Israeli-linked ships in port in the UAE or going past Yemen itself.
The Israel-owned cargo ship, the MV Helios Ray, is now back at sea after suffering a suspected Iranian attack.
Overall, we have a very significant pattern of attacks committed on the high seas. And it only seems that this is actually recognised or noteworthy when foreign nationals are killed or when there is some substantial damage done to the vessels that have been attacked.
Iran are trading barbs over a new flashpoint in the Gulf of Oman. Last week, a mysterious explosion ripped through the hull of an Israeli vessel stationed off Muscat. Now, the initial assessment is being...
But otherwise, what you're saying, this tit-for-tat is going on quite constantly in the sort of escalation of tension. But in all of that, I mean, it seems like no one's also taken responsibility. And is that true, that no one has claimed responsibility for any of these incidents?
It is true. The Israelis quite often don't claim responsibility for anything that they do. They've all been dismissed as a mystery, even if there is evidence pointing to Israel being responsible. The accommodation, according to them, is if we don't publicly shame those who we attack, then the likelihood of retaliation is less. The Iranians also, their response to anything that they do or that they're accused of doing is blanket denials, as has been the case this time.
Right. So if we zoom out a bit, what's the wider context? Why is all this happening?
The Israelis do see Iran as their biggest strategic foe in the region. They see them as behind most of the serious threats to security that the country faces, whether that be Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Gaza, or Hezbollah in Lebanon. And they think also that over the last 10 years in particular, that the civil war in Syria and also the chaos in Iraq has allowed Iran to use its overland presence to consolidate a bridgehead in Syria, which could be used to pose a serious threat towards Israeli security in the future.
So what efforts are being made on each side to stop this from just spilling out into all-out war?
Well, for now, there certainly is no dialogue. Neither side talk to each other. They see each other as trenchant foes. One side wants to dominate the other to the point of absolute military victory. So is there a chance of things spilling out of control completely? Yes, there is.
And on top of this, we are talking about a nuclear power here in Israel, and a state that many believe is very close to having nuclear weapons capability.
Well, the Israelis have taken a significant toll on the nuclear scientists of Iran.
Some breaking news for you. Iranian state media are saying one of the country's top nuclear scientists has been assassinated.
These are coveted figures, popular figures. They're seen as patriots who have been performing sovereign duties of great merit.
The body of Iran's Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was laid to rest outside Tehran's Imamzadeh Saleh Mosque.
There have been upwards of 15 Iranian scientists or officials that have been linked to its nuclear program who have been killed.
Allahumma inna hadha abduk wa ibnu abdik.
There have been also raids into Iranian territory by Israeli intelligence officials who have taken records away from warehouses. There have been mysterious explosions at nuclear sites around the country.
Iran is blaming Israel for an apparent attack on an underground nuclear facility. Officials in Iran say the attack set off a fire and a possible minor explosion.
None of this, as you would imagine, has played well inside Iran itself, where a large number of Iranians see what has been happening as a direct attack on Iranian sovereignty. They see themselves as having the equal right as anyone else in the region to build nuclear capacity. So the Iranian response to these repeated Israeli attacks over many years now. It's certainly been one of, if you can do it to us, we can do it to you. There's a very strong resentment within Iranian society that Israel has, or feels it has, carte blanche to do what it does.
Iranian authorities have described the incident as an act of nuclear terrorism, vowing retaliation.
In Israel, very similar feelings. They do believe, largely, that the population has been conditioned to believe that Iran poses an existential threat to the country.
Are you at war with Iran?
They're at war with us. We never sought any enmity with Iran. They openly declare that their goal is to annihilate us every day.
And adding to this sense of instability is the fact that both Iran and Israel have installed new leaders. Let's concentrate on Iran first. Its new president is Ibrahim Raisi. He only took office last week.
Dr. Raisi, برای تحلیف به جایگاه تشریف می‌آورد.
What can you tell us about him?
Ibrahim Raisi is a hardliner. He is somebody who was personally chosen by Grand Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He is somebody who was seen as following and or prosecuting the vision of the Islamic Revolution. He's been a supporter of the Revolutionary Guards throughout recent decades. He was a judicial official for several years in which crackdowns on protests were directed under his watch, as were convictions and in some cases executions. He really is seen to be Ali Khamenei's man in many ways, and it does seem as though the message that Iran is sending in electing him or nominating him is that he will be an unflinching face towards the West.
Because the new Prime Minister of Israel, Naftali Bennett, has chaired his first cabinet meeting and has promised to heal the country's rifts.
And then on the other side, we have Naftali Bennett. He came into power in Israel in June. What's his position on Iran?
Naftali Bennett is a hardliner on Iran, no question. He was a protege of Benjamin Netanyahu. There is very little distance or daylight between the views towards Iran of both men.
This weekend, Iran chose a new president, Ibrahim Raisi. Of all the people that Khamenei could have chosen, he chose the hangman of Tehran, the man infamous among Iranians.
They grew up believing that Iran is the number one threat that they face in the entire Middle East. Bennett is very much a security hawk, so he will continue, more or less, the policies vis-a-vis Netanyahu towards Iran.
So is there a risk, do you think, that for both Raisi and Bennett, that they'll try to consolidate their respective domestic positions by escalating these attacks?
There is that chance of an escalation getting out of control, and before you know it, rather than having an attritional war or a shadow war, you have something even more dangerous. Although it's really not Raisi's call. This would be Ali Khamenei's call if he was looking to escalate something against the Israelis. And he's a man who knows his foe quite well. He's often said that he doesn't want to be drawn into something which is more direct and confrontational and openly so. He would calculate that the balance of military power is not with him, that fighting wars in foreign lands through proxies, attritionally and patiently, is a better way to tackle such an adversary.
Coming up, the shadow war and the Iranian nuclear talks. So there have been a lot of attacks on the seas and on the ground over the last few years. In that period, one of the biggest issues in the region has been the fate of the Iranian nuclear deal.
I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal.
This is a deal done during the Obama presidency that saw a relaxation of sanctions on Iran in exchange for them committing to limit their nuclear activities. The Trump administration withdrew from that deal.
In a few moments, I will sign a presidential memorandum to begin reinstating U.S. nuclear sanctions on the Iranian regime.
But there are now talks underway with a new U.S. administration to try and revive it. How are they going?
The talks are taking place in Vienna. They began around 2 months ago. There are officials from both sides who are presenting lists of demands. They're comprehensive. They're very, very detailed. There are junior officials. There are large teams which are thrashing out some of those demands or ambits, and some of those demands are being received by the Americans as quite reasonable.
Iran's main demand, sanctions relief in return for reducing uranium enrichment to acceptable levels. The US says no concessions before compliance.
The Iranians are saying that the bulk of those demands that they put forward are being agreed to, or the Americans are coming back to them and saying, well, give us a bit more on this or that. But they do think that the large teams on both sides are very much looking towards a deal. And they say that the American frustrations, which are being quite regularly expressed, including by Secretary of State Tony Blinken, that the talks don't appear to be going too far, are American brinkmanship.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says negotiations with Iran over the long-stalled 2015 nuclear deal cannot go on forever.
They sense very much a keenness by Washington and the Biden administration to sign up to something which restores an agreement, or the tenets of it, and allows the Iranian economy to be, kick-started once again. And they think that they're positioned quite well. They say it could take several more weeks or several more months, but at the end, they believe they'll get to where they need to be.
How does Israel view these talks?
Israel is at best highly sceptical and at worst hostile towards the nuclear talks.
Raisi's selection is, I would say, the last chance for the world powers to wake up before returning to the nuclear agreement and to understand who they're doing business with. These guys are murderers, mass murderers.
They see them as doing nothing other than emboldening Iran and enabling it through releasing tens of billions of dollars of money which had been frozen back into the Iranian economy, where that money could be used to send oil to regional proxies, or to sending weapons or money overland, in some cases raw, fresh dollars.
A regime of brutal hangmen must never be allowed to have weapons of mass destruction that will enable it to not to kill thousands, but millions.
They also see a relaxation of controls on the Iranian economy as being potentially a kickstarter for its nuclear program, which could become ever harder to monitor. So the Israelis have been lobbying for a long time now at all levels of the US administration for these talks to desist, insisting that they will do nothing other than increase instability in the Middle East.
And despite the Iranians' confidence, the talks remain pretty fraught.
The talks are so fraught because the stakes are so high. Iran knows what a strategic play this would be for it. If they are readmitted into the so-called community of nations, and this happens after a US president has done all he could to not just to sideline them, but to crush their economy.
The Iranian regime is the leading state sponsor of terror.
They would see that as a great moral victory, not just an economic victory.
The fact is, this was a horrible, one-sided deal that should have never, ever been made.
So they're prepared to squeeze this out as long and hard as they could. For the Americans, they also understand the stakes. They have been lobbied very heavily by the Israelis and by some others that you are licensing Iranian officials to run amok. Now, there's a very strong counter-narrative to that within this current administration. They do believe that Iran being given more of a voice in regional affairs is not a bad thing. In fact, that's a natural fit. So the Americans understand the stakes as well. They just have a very different worldview to the Iranians.
Iran's supreme leader threatened in February to greatly increase the quality of the country's nuclear enrichment. Tehran now intends to follow through.
We just sent a new letter to the agency saying that we would start from tomorrow enrichment up to 60%.
So while these talks are going on, Iran is developing its enrichment capacity, and it might soon, like Israel, have nuclear capability. Is there a sense that time is running out?
Iran's attempts to enrich uranium are very much seen as a tipping point in terms of whether the Israelis would openly attack the country or continue to try and commit extensive acts of sabotage. They do say that if they reach a point where Iran is within striking distance of being able to create a nuclear weapon, that they would act determinedly to do so.
I will never allow Iran to obtain the nuclear capability to carry out its genocidal goal of eliminating Israel.
That is a factor within the nuclear discussions as well. The US response under Joe Biden is to dissuade Iran from doing so by freeing up billions of dollars which has been frozen or people that are put under sanctions and giving them incentive not to continue with a nuclear enrichment program or a uranium enrichment program and to instead focus on building tenets of the economy. It's a very big gamble, according to the Israelis, and it's a fundamental point of difference between both allies who do see tackling this in very different ways.
So if you look at these incidents on the sea, the mysterious sabotage of vessels, you know, a tanker going up in flames and sinking, hijackings, drone attacks, do you think they're partly a kind of saber-rattling by both Iran and Israel to try and affect the talks?
Well, I think very much that there's some saber-rattling going on. There's a negotiating strategy that both sides do have, and the Iranians are holding out for as good a deal as they can possibly get. But the fact remains they are keen for this deal. They do want it to happen. At the very highest levels of the administration, through their senior officials and through their proxies in the region, it is known as fact that the Iranians do want to conclude something with the Americans and that they think they can probably get that done.
What are the consequences now? I mean, a Brit has died. What does it mean for those huge tankers now trying to sail around the Gulf with these targets on them?
Well, it is a very dangerous time for tankers or freighters on the waters of the region. There is no question that tensions are as high as they have been in the last 2.5 years. And the high seas drama doesn't look like dying down at any point soon. There will likely be some sort of retaliation from the Israelis in coming days or weeks. And I can't see that it's stopping there. It would be very much the Iranians taking their turn to ensure that they don't look weakened or humiliated and to strike back.
So what you're saying is that the shadow war will continue to heat up and we can expect a lot more of this.
The shadow war is by no means over. It will continue on the waters of the Red Sea, the Mediterranean, the Indian Ocean and the Arabian Gulf for many months, if not years to come. As ever, in brinkmanship such as this, there is the danger of miscalculation. And it does appear that we are not too far away from such a miscalculation taking place and a more broader conflict of some description, not necessarily war, breaking out.
Martin, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Martin Chulov. You can read all of his reporting on this at theguardian.com. That's it for today. The producer was Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. We'll be back tomorrow.